So you're probably asking now, or I should ask you perhaps, what does this look like? What are we, and I'll be asking you guys, as I have been through this, these weeks working up to this workshop, you know, what do we see here? When we talk about this product, what does it look like here? What do we see? Because this here, this is the test of everything that you're going to do. You can have wonderful ideas, you know, but if you can't put them here, if you can't find a way to get them up here, then your ideas go nowhere. So what does this methodology look like? I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let me show you a piece. The first piece that I did for this company that I worked for in the mid-90s, it was my first shot at doing something serious with this methodology that we call backpack video journalism, okay? The piece is called Chain Gang.
Shoulder to shoulder,
tighten it up. Come on, gentlemen.
Kobe!
Ben Crenshaw!
Yeah.
Take care of your shirt, Carol Crenshaw. Hal Lavey! Lamont Ferris!
Michael Martinez!
I got you. My name is Michael Martinez. I'm 42 years old. I'm in here for fraud, embezzlement.
Richard May!
This is one of the most degrading things in the world to me. A man don't supposed to be down like this. And then I don't like being out here around these cotton fields with these chains on me. Only people that ever been in chains and slavery in this country been black folks. And then to have me out here in chains under these same conditions and tell me to work around some cotton fields I was supposed to fill.
Michael Martinier and 400 other inmates at the Limestone Correctional Facility in Alabama are the first in the nation to be put back on the chain gang.
Pick up the chain! Let's ride!
When I lay down at night, or when they put those chains on me and have to get on the ground on my hands and knees like a dog, you know, I think about slavery. Because all the time that I was young, when I ever seen chains, it was on black people.
It's a sight most Americans haven't seen in decades. Prisoners working by the roadsides and in fields, shackled at the ankles in groups of five. The hours are long, the sun is hot, the complaints are frequent.
That don't make no sense, man. We got a cooler full of hot water. Number hot water, man.
Man, drive 30 miles before you tell you that won't.
Every once in a while, they'll air some complaints about having to wear the chains and the leg irons, but they're pretty well stuck on the idea they're going to have to do that, that all the complaining in the world's not going to do any good.
Y'all get your shoestrings off them chains. Let's go.
Some inmates, like Martinier, find their own ways of getting around the system.
You got to work. They can't tell you how hard to work.
The chain gang program was introduced in May as a way of discouraging parole violators, repeat and first-time offenders.
I'll be here one afternoon this week.
Okay.
All right. Me personally, when I first heard about this, I said, this is crazy. We're going to chain people. We're going back to the 20s. You know, that was my first impression. And now that we're doing it, I think it's great. I think it's a good program. I really do.
I've been on the chain 2 weeks.
Yeah. What's it like?
You know him. It's hell.
Billy Mitchell is serving a life sentence for robbery.
As you can see, we drag each other all day long, like animals. One man gets out of step, another man gets hurt. We go in, our ankles are messed up, our legs are raw.
This thing cutting on my ankles.
Bruise all the way around the chain, pulling, going up and down, scraping on your leg.
I say this is not going to help. Degrade and demoralize a man to this extent. This is not going to help society with their problem.
Well, to me, it's not degrading or inhumane. The problem that they have expressed to me is they feel, again, it's a throwback to slavery, and of course it's not that. It's not inhumane because it doesn't harm them in any way. We've had zero reports from our medical unit.
How long you had those?
About 2 weeks. I've seen the doctor, the nurse today, and I got to put me in for a doctor next Thursday. So, medical in here ain't worth shit.
Listen up. That first line right there. First line. Y'all step on up right here.
The public has gotten tired of crime. Individual cannot go to a mall and without fear of being attacked in the parking lot. And it's basically, hey, we're tired of this. We want something done. We want a get tough approach to crime, and this is what we're doing.
Chains ain't gonna stop no crime. So what make them think that a piece of metal on somebody's ankles is gonna deter crime? When they got a death penalty that ain't stopping crime one bit.
It's 18-32. You line up at the door. Don't go in. Line up at the door.
But for some inmates, like Robbie Satterfield, the chain gang seems to be a powerful incentive to stay out of trouble.
I've been here for over 30 days now, and this right here has had an effect on me. I don't want to come back to the penitentiary. I don't want to come back.
Satterfield served 10 years for car theft before violating his parole and ending up on the chain gang.
They're very abusive here, as you can see. This country club's not cut out to what I thought it was going to be.
We want to revoke our membership.
Yeah, we want to revoke our membership and get out, but they won't let us now. They said we signed up for 15 years, we have to do it.
For Satterfield, the chains are another rough step in a life full of hardship.
I think the main reason that I'm in the penitentiary right now is because of the atmosphere that I was raised in. My father was alcoholic. He beat my mother. This was a regular routine, and I watched this all the way until he got killed. He got murdered at a bar when I was 7 years old for beating my mother. A man shot him in the back with a pump shotgun. All the people that I had in my life that I was socialized with was drunks, drug addicts, and thieves, you know? So that's what I grew up to be, you know? That's why I'm in here now.
There are more than just chains to the chain gang. All 400 prisoners live in a converted warehouse. There's no privacy, no TV, no store, no exercise equipment, no family visits.
Not seeing my family is the worst thing for me. I've got a wife and I've got two kids. A little boy that's gonna be 2 years old the 15th of this month, and I'm gonna miss his birthday.
Inmates on the chain gang also get less food than inmates in the main prison.
I believe ever since I've been here, since 39 days, I believe I went out of that dining hall 3 times full. The other times I was still hungry when I walked out.
With little to do, time can seem as though it's standing still.
I don't like weekends. You know, weekends just, they kind of like just rock my world. And then you have more time to sit around the weekend and you get to thinking more about home and a lot of stupid things you done.
Martin Ear grew up in a middle-class neighborhood in Hartford, Connecticut.
Privilege, I could say by the grace of God, yeah, I had a damn good childhood, you know? I had a good one. And it's funny because I've had people ask me over the years, when I was getting in trouble, you know, one of the biggest questions would be, why do you do this, why do you do that and stuff? And even to this day, you know, it's hard to explain.
On the weekends, the prison yard becomes a mosque to some.
But Jesus make his way to this place.
A church to others. And a gym for many. There are no weights, but the prisoners make do with what they find.
Doing them off the cans, you get more stretch. Instead of doing regular push-ups, because you can't go down as far, when you do them off the cans, you go past your shoulders. You go on down. They get more stretch out of it, get more workout. That's the only thing we got to work with since they don't let us have any weights over here. It's the only way that we can stay in shape.
But too many men, with too much time and too little space, can be explosive. This inmate got into a fight with a guard over an extra serving of food. Another was beaten by inmates for informing on the first.
What happened out there, Red?
Officer jumped on me in the kitchen. Man, he was swinging death licks at me with his stick. And just so happened, I just retaliated and caught his stick. and held on to his stick with a death hold.
Captain, you're getting out of this dorm.
Captain,
I've been in this dorm too long.
A lot of the public has a conception that an inmate comes to prison, he lays up on his butt all day and watches color TV in an air-conditioned room and doesn't have to do nothing but sit back and get three meals fed to him a day and all that. But now you've been through that environment down there. Would you want to be there? I don't think I would.
It's a tough situation that's about to get tougher. The state plans to add 200 more inmates to the gangs and to triple up the bunks.
If they make it really harsh, the way they're talking about doing, taking everything out and making people stay in here 6 months and stuff, I think there's going to be a lot of fights in here. I think there's going to be a lot of hostility.
When they take it all away and they start this all throughout the country, they're going to have problems. It's going to be Attica spread. It's going to be Attica all around the country.
Inmates' tolerance for the chains and the tough conditions is wearing thin.
You take a man out there and you tie him on chains and you work him all day and you come back and feed him a few peas and a piece of cornbread, you think, well, he ought to be able to live off of it.
It's the shackles and the way they treat you, cuss you out, that really the reason why everybody don't like is being treated like an animal, still like a human being.
The people here, if they were off the chain and they talked to us the way they did, these inmates, and I mean 80% of them would be jumping on that guard, because nobody gets talked to like that.
Now, your name is?
David Payne.
David, how old are you?
26.
And you're in here for? Aggravated assault?
Yes, sir.
Or parole violation?
No, aggravated. My first felony.
And how much time they give you?
4 years.
4 years. Okay.
And I'm Joe Hartwell, 52, and I'm in here for parole violation for being outside the county. And I got 15 years.
Pete Sims, 42, in here for theft.
How long?
3 years.
How old are you, Pete?
42.
This your first time in here?
First round.
Do you think this chain gang experience is going to keep you out of here on a second time?
Chain gang experience ain't gonna keep me out of nothing. It's just like being an alcoholic. Going to a treatment center ain't gonna keep you out of nothing. It ain't gonna keep you from drinking. You have to do that yourself.
Darrell Smith, assault. 2 year split on a 15.
Inmates are not the only ones worried about pushing the tough conditions and tight quarters too far.
We don't want to push it too tight. If we screw it too tight, this place could blow, or any other prison could blow. Not just Limestone Correctional Facility, but any prison in this nation. You put the screws on these guys too tight, they will blow.
The prisoners who make trouble or refuse to go quietly to the chains are kept in an isolation ward.
Are you going to report the story the way you see it or the way they want it told?
Just the way it happens.
Again, I must say the degradation of this black man is complete. What little amount of dignity I have is gone with this program, this chain.
It's not really cruel. It may be considered punishment, but they were sentenced to do time. And last I heard, the judge said it, do that time in hard labor. Hard labor don't mean laying up in bed watching TV.
The chain gangs were brought in, at least in part, to help the prison system save money. Fewer guards are needed to watch inmates in chains. Not all officers feel safe on the highways, guarding men who are getting angrier every day.
It can be very dangerous. They can find anything laying out there on that road, and it wouldn't be a real pretty picture if they're walking down that highway picking up trash and one of them finds a loaded gun that possibly one of their buddies threw out the day before. So, you know, that's kind of frightening to think that one day you may be walking a squad and all of a sudden a guy turned around and say, all right, give me your gun, officer.
The big question for prison authorities may be how far they can push the threshold of punishment before crossing the line.
I see this chain gang ending in Alabama tragically. Not because they passed something in the legislative to outdo it, not because of the public outcry, but I actually see either some inmates getting killed or some officers getting killed out there. Something tragic is going to happen.
For Satterfield, the chain gang represents more than just a personal threat.
I realize I've done wrong out there, and that's why I'm in here. But You just can't keep pushing a man and pushing a man to the limit. Eventually, the man's gonna fight back.
If you came back here 10 years from now, all you would have is a bigger chain gang. And the next thing they would be saying, well, we're gonna put the cuff on their neck and chain them together and see if that work.
Chain gang. Nowhere but in America, baby.
This is Bill Gentile reporting.
Let's figure out how is this different from what you typically see on television or on the web. How is this different?
You're not standing in front of the camera talking to a camera.
There's no correspondent, is there? There's no correspondent. And this word correspondent is loaded because what you know, for me, a correspondent can be, isn't always, but it can be a wall of separation between the practitioner, the communicator, and his or her audience. I mean, your objective is to communicate with people. And you know, I always break this methodology down to three components, okay? There's a visual component, which is the driving force inside the whole methodology. This methodology is all about images. It's all about visual communication. That's why they call it television. Yeah? So, you know, that's the engine inside this methodology, the visuals. And then you have the natural sound that you garner in the field, either through the characters you follow, or it's the cars going by, or the ambient sound of an engine rolling, or whatever that sound may be. And the third component of this methodology is what? What's the third component, Ann?
The interviews.
Story.
Story is runs through the whole thing. Yes, it's kind of the interview, but think of the mechanics of it. We've got the visuals, we've got what people tell us, the interview with you know, the natural sound that is acquired in the field. What's the third component? You heard a lot of it here.
Narration.
It's my narration.
Narration.
Okay? And the narration is what connects the dots of the thing. The narration is what keeps you, you know, focused on that controlling idea. Okay? So, you know, when you introduce a correspondent into this arrangement here, into this three component a methodology, to me, it's erecting a barrier, and you're diminishing the visuals, which are the most important part of the craft, to second-class citizenry. You're saying you're less important than looking at this correspondent. She may be beautiful, or he may be handsome, you know, but why are you taking away the most important component of the craft, which are the visuals? Doesn't make sense to me. So there's no correspondent. How else is this different from what we typically see?
Longer.
It's longer, isn't it? Not only did I have time to go to the field to talk to these guys, I had 4 days. There were 400, excuse me, there were 400 prisoners in this place. So I had to get to this place and spend time there sussing out who were the characters that I was going to follow, how I was going to tell the story, you know, get these guys to kind of relax around me, and then, you know, do all of this stuff in 4 days. I had some time to edit the stuff, and it's a longer piece, so it really does, I think, get to the heart of the story, I think. I'd like to believe that it does. So it's longer. We have no correspondent or no wall here. Longer is another component of this. What else? Somebody tell me something about what does it look like? What does it look like?
Various angles, settings, backgrounds.
It's visually dynamic, isn't it? There are a lot of close-ups.
Yeah. You're always moving.
There's movement.
Keeps moving, different shots.
And that's not
feet.
Yeah, that's not coincidence. I mean, one of the things that I love about this whole methodology is that it's an intellectual challenge and it's a physical challenge as well. You know, and one of the things that separates me from a lot of guys who can't do this is that I can, you know, I'm willing and I'm still able to, you know, run in front of people and, you know, run up beside people and get down at low angles and jump, climb up on top of stuff and jump down on top of stuff. And to do this, if you're out there and you're shooting and all your pictures are made from this perspective, it's going to be, you know what they call that when it comes up to the screen? You know what they call that? It's called death. It's called visual death. And that's what your piece is going to look like. And you're going to kill people with it, right? So you've got to get down here and shoot up that way. You got to get over here and shoot over here. You have to climb up and shoot down on stuff. You know, the more dynamic your piece is, the more your pictures move, and I'm not talking about just moving the camera around, the more they move inside of them. When you go out today, I don't want you guys to move cameras. I don't want you to zoom. I don't want you to zoom in, zoom out. I don't want you to pan. I don't want you to do any of that stuff. What I want you to do is to make snapshots with video. Okay? 20-second snapshots. We'll talk about that in a sec, in a bit. All right? Let's go back to this thing. It's a longer piece, Chad.
Was that a tripod? Did you use a tripod for any of that piece?
The interviews. Okay. The interview. One interview. The interview with the main. I'm sorry. The two interviews. The guy who had a goofy cigar in his mouth half the time. He was trying to quit cigarettes, so he figures he'd get his nicotine hit from the cigar. And the guy who was sitting in front of the gate. I had a tripod with them. The rest of the thing, I never use tripods. I use them almost exclusively for interviews and sometimes for like long pan shots. I did a piece in the Sahara Desert a number of years ago. And I had to have a tripod to do these long pans across the horizon because it totally suited what I was doing. But other than that, and I use these small tripods here. We'll talk about this more, especially tomorrow. But you don't need, these 80-pound tripods. You need these lightweight, small, very user-friendly tripods to do this kind of job.
And one last question. Yes. One lens for all that?
One lens. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, you had a variable focal length lens, but I didn't have a wide-angle connector or anything like that. Yes?
I had a quick question. You had such an incredible amount of detail here.
Yeah.
I mean, each of the... characters that you have, I mean, you've caught them from very different angles, which seem to say something more about them. I mean, whether it's their feet or hands or whatever. How did you, if you had just 4 days to work on this, how did you go about getting that amount of detail?
Let's list that, your question about character. This thing had character.
Yeah.
It's another thing. This wasn't, a story about, this was not a story about the Limestone Correctional Facility with Michael Martinier and Robbie Satterfield as characters, right? This was a story about Robbie Satterfield and Michael Martinier in the Limestone Correctional Facility, wasn't it? Because I used these characters as vehicles. I loaded them up with information about the Limestone Correctional Facility, about Chain Gang, but I told the story through those two characters. Why these two characters? What's different about these two characters? What did you find compelling as viewers about these two characters? Rhett? Did you find these guys interesting at all?
Yeah, that kind of, I think, actually they were quite well spoken.
They were incredibly articulate, weren't they?
I was kind of amazed.
Yeah.
And they had a certain amount of personality, for sure.
Yeah.
Frank.
They had personality, they were articulate. What
Frank,
else make them, sorry?
They were honest.
They were honest, they were totally open, totally frank. There's I use a three-component test to gauge characters, okay? And the first of those three tests is if a person wants to be a character, there's a will there to be a character. We know as Americans that almost every American wants to be on television because for some reason it validates Americans, okay? But beyond that, particularly in places like this, questionable places like a prison, a lot of the people aren't going to want to be a character in your film. As a matter of fact, one of the first things that I did when I got there, I didn't go around and ask people, could you be a character in my film? What do you think I did for the first couple of hours that I was in this prison for 4 days?
Just talk to watch people. Everyone.
The first thing that I did was I grabbed my camera, and this is what I did. This is what I did for quite a while. That's it. I stood around, and then people bubbled up, and they came to me, and they said, "What are you doing? Who you work for?" They come to me and said, what's the story about? Some of them came up and said, if you point that camera to me and I'll break it over your head. I said, I'm cool. You're not going to be a character in the film. I got it. I understand. Right? But other ones, they came to me and asked, what are you doing? So they want to be a character. Right? So that's the first test. If someone wants to be a character. The second test is... Somebody mentioned it here before. What's the second test? Steiner, what do you think?
Well, you need to have a story, something he wants to tell you.
He has to have a story, right? So, I've got 400 guys here, and I've got 4 days to figure out, okay, who am I going to tell? Who am I going to use as characters to tell the story of this prison? Because I just can't walk in and do an essay on the prison. I don't want to do that. You guys watch this piece, and I think most of you were paying attention precisely because, Michael Martinier and Robbie Satterfield, number one, they wanted to be characters. Number two, they had really cool stories to tell. You know, Robbie Satterfield talking about his father got shot in the back, you know, with a pump shotgun for beating his mother yet again. You know, that's a pretty, it's a hell of a story. So they had important stories to tell. That's the second of the three component tests on character. Okay, you want to be a character. Unlike some of the guys who, you know, about a third of the guys said, "Don't point that thing to me." You know, you have a story to tell. And what's the last? What can be the last component? Yes.
Does it have to have very high emotional content?
Well, that's part of the good story, I think. You know. What else?
They're good talkers.
Sorry.
Good talkers are there.
These guys were extraordinarily articulate, weren't they? They were extraordinarily articulate. So they wanted to be characters. They had great stories to tell, and they were articulate. They could tell the story. I mean, I hung around with a couple of guys in the prison who wanted to be characters, who had good stories to tell, but they couldn't put two sentences together that made a lot of sense. But these guys were wonderful. And there's one more kind of hidden component as to why Michael and Robbie made really good characters. I'll tell you, it's because of this. It's because, you had your hand up, Anne.
One was white, one was black, so and? They had different perspectives, and one thought that it was a deterrent and one didn't.
Okay, you're close. I think they made such compelling characters because, you know, what people from outside this country perceive is that all the black people, you know, they're raised in broken families, the violence, drug-ridden, you know, crackheads, you know. I mean, that's the sense that I think most foreigners get about blacks living in America, right? And white people have stable, you know, livelihoods and stable lives, and, you know, they kind of live in nice places and nice houses and so forth. Here, those two models were completely flipped. Those two stereotypes, including Michael Martinier's family, his father was an attorney. He came from Hartford, Connecticut. You know, he had a good childhood. Everybody, when he was a kid, was asking him, "Michael, why are you getting in trouble like this? What's wrong? What's happening here?" He can't, you know, probably to this day, he can't explain it. Robbie Satterfield, as he says in the film, "Everybody in my childhood who I knew was either drunks, drug addicts, or thieves." You know, what an incredible reversal of roles. And to me, as an American, that's what made these guys really compelling. So we have characters, no correspondent, you know, it's longer than most things. We had characters here. Somebody talked about the intimacy of the imagery and so forth. The imagery, I think, was compelling. And this has to do with the fact that, you know, my first career was as a correspondent. The second career was as a photographer. So I know how light works. I know how light plays on objects. I know about composition. I understand how to make close-ups. I understand that language, the basic. That's the foundation of the methodology that we're studying here. The stuff that I learned as a still photographer. Okay. Anything else that's different here?
I thought that was one other thing. It almost seemed like these guys were not doomed. I mean, it was almost like they were in the chain gang, but there was some indication that they could come out of it, but they were kind of locked in. And one did. I mean, it wasn't as if they were completely locked in.
Yeah.
They were so articulate. It was almost like there could be a redemption path.
Yeah.
But
that's very interesting.
But it was very complex.
Yeah. Yeah, they're hopeful. I mean, you get a sense of hope with them. These are not bad guys.
Right.
These are guys who went wrong for one reason or another. They're not mean. They're not terrible people. They, you know, they messed up. That's why they're in jail. They messed up. Anything else? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I thought it was interesting that the entire piece sort of, I don't want to say it argued with itself, but it would point counterpoint.
Yeah,
it's, you know, I'm not hurting you know, it's not hurting them. They deserve this. You know, clearly they have wounds on their legs. And it, what I found interesting is there was less towards the end persuasion, more as you know, you pose the question: is this right? Should this be acceptable? And you did it through the perspective of these two characters. It compelled me so much I had to actually Google search whether or not this was still going on, and consequently it was canceled about a year after the program, which is...
That's right.
You made me ask that question because I didn't have a definitive answer after watching the piece whether or not it was right or wrong, because the logical side of a person would say, oh, well, they deserve it, and then you know, you get in through the perspective of these people, so
Great point. That's a great point.